Public Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Labor Department released new unemployment numbers a half hour ago, showing the economy added 171,000 new jobs last month, with an October jobless rate of 7.9%. The report adds another element to an ongoing discussion this election year about the economy and what policies would foster the best environment for job creation. It's a conversation in which our guest today has been deeply engaged as she runs for New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District. Anne McLean Custer is a longtime lawyer and Democratic activist. This is her second attempt to win the 2nd District seat. She missed victory in 2010 by just 3,500 votes. Now Custer is in another squeaker of a race against incumbent Republican Charlie Bass. The two candidates have met numerous times, debating and disagreeing on numerous topics, from how to improve the economy to fixing what ails health care to who has the best temperament to represent the 2nd District on Capitol Hill. Today in The Exchange, Democratic Congressional candidate Anne McLean Custer is here, and let's get you into our conversation. 2nd District voters, this is your race. What do you want to hear from your next member of Congress? What final question do you have for Ms. Custer before you vote in just a few days? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post your comments on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Anne McLean Custer, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Laura. I'm wonderful to be here.
Well, let's start off with those jobs numbers. Again, unemployment at 7.9%, up a tiny bit from 7.8% the month before. What's your reaction to these new numbers, Ms. Custer?
Well, Laura, I think the important thing to stay focused on is 32 months in a row of net job growth. You know, when President Obama came into office, we were losing 750,000 jobs per month. And that went on from the election all the way through to the inauguration. And so it has been a slow slog getting back, but we're headed in the right direction. And I'm actually very encouraged. I think the 170,000 jobs was better than expected. And it clearly shows us on a path to recovery. We're not there yet, but it's the right direction to head.
Economists polled by Dow Jones had expected 125,000 new jobs. So this is a little bit more than expected. Still, it's a slight uptick from the month before.
I think even that is not a bad sign. What it means is that people are getting back into the job market. We know that people have been sidelined for a number of years. And I think it's actually a good sign to see that people are getting back out there looking for jobs. And what we need to do now is really stay focused on creating good jobs for the middle class. And that's what I've been talking about throughout this campaign.
Well, related to hiring and jobs, we're hearing from businesses, Ms. Custer, holding back on hiring because they're worried about the so-called fiscal cliff. This is where automatic spending cuts under last year's debt ceiling agreement kick in, along with the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. What would you do as a member of Congress to avoid this fiscal cliff? No matter who's elected, they're going to have to face it.
Absolutely, Laura. You know, we wouldn't be having this conversation if Congress was working well. And I think the American people are very clear that Congress is not working well. They're not working together, and they're not working on the goals that our country faces right now. And in particular, it is a drag on the economy when Congress can't get their own fiscal house in order. So what we need to do is come together in a bipartisan way, sit down and talk about the focused cuts rather than the sequestration, which is a threat to the entire economy. It's a threat to every aspect right here in New Hampshire, just to lop off, for example, defense jobs. That would include BAE, which is a wonderful company that, with a great motto, they protect those who protect us. So I don't want to be cutting the various products that the troops need in the field, the night vision goggles and the body armor. Let's look at much more specific cuts. There are redundant weapon systems that the Pentagon doesn't even want. We ought to be looking at our corporate welfare. We can't afford these oil and gas subsidies, and we certainly can't afford new tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires that have been proposed by by Governor Romney and supported by Congressman Bass. So we need to be making targeted cuts. We need a much more efficient government, leaner and smaller all the way around, but getting the job done for the American people.
Now, you mentioned taxing the, or not, we can't afford tax breaks for the wealthy. Are you referring, Ms. Custer, to the eternal question of whether the Bush tax cuts should be allowed to expire or not? Democrats have said we should not let them expire. We should keep them in place for everybody except those who make more than $250,000 a year. Is that what you're talking about there?
What I'm saying, Laura, yes. What I'm saying is that the way you grow the economy is middle-class demand. It's consumption by the middle class, and that's what we need to do. If you look back at the Clinton years, we created 23 million new jobs, and we completely eliminated the deficit that he'd inherited. And in fact, he passed off the government to President George W. Bush with a surplus. That's the growth that we need to get back to, and I would support the Clinton-era tax levels. We cannot afford tax breaks for millionaires and multimillionaires, and not only the highest level of the Bush tax breaks, but Congressman Bass has voted for the Ryan budget that includes additional tax breaks, $265,000 for millionaires. That's going to add, over the next 10 years, close to $5 trillion to our debt. It absolutely is not a serious effort to control the deficit and bring down our debt.
When we look at those tax cuts, and again, this 250,000 number that we keep coming to, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Ms. Custer, and including with an economist who said, look, if you made this change, it would bring in about $100 billion in revenue. A start, but nowhere near to solving the problem, given the enormity of the debt, $16 trillion. It's gone way up under President Obama, and a $1.1 trillion deficit. First time in my memory that deficits have been in the trillions. So these tax cuts you're talking about, you know, kind of a drop in the bucket, really.
Well, I don't think hundreds of billions of dollars is a drop in the bucket. And the additional tax breaks in this Ryan proposal would be $4 trillion added to the debt. So, by the way, we need to go back to President Obama inherited $11 trillion in debt from President Bush. Look, that's where the trouble started. And Congressman Bass was there voting for the two wars, voting for the a provision that prohibits the federal government from negotiating prescription drug prices with the prescription drug companies. That costs $156 billion in dollars that are just lining the pockets of drug companies. So here's my deficit reduction plan. End the wars, bring the troops home.
And that's we can't going, afford that's it. Happening right now.
Absolutely. And it's something that President Obama has done to end the war in Iraq. And we need to bring the troops home from Afghanistan and make sure that we don't get into another conflict abroad with hundreds of thousands of troops that we don't pay for. Then we need to get our economy going again. I've talked about this consumption from the middle class, making sure that we're creating jobs. That's the best way to bring down the deficit, and that's what we did during the Clinton years. And then let's cut the redundant weapons programs, cut redundant government programs. We have lots of programs across the government that can be eliminated or consolidated. President Obama has already cut $1 trillion from the federal government. And cut through the red tape and the bureaucracy. I want a leaner, smaller government, much more efficient. And then there's a whole list of corporate welfare that we can no longer afford.
Well, everybody says they're going to get rid of corporate welfare, but it never changes.
Well, what I'll give you a very concrete example. Congressman Bass supports adding additional tax breaks. First of all, I want to close the tax breaks for companies that are shipping jobs overseas. Why are we giving an advantage to a company that's sending jobs? New Hampshire has lost 20,000 jobs to China. Let's give tax incentives to creating jobs right here at home. He also supports increasing tax breaks in the energy field. Why pay these subsidies to oil and gas companies, $40 billion that he's voted for, when they're making record profits and charging us record prices at the pump? let's create a level playing field for renewables, bring down those subsidies, and we can all save the dollars from in our taxes and stimulate the renewable energy.
Well, and lots of charges and countercharges there with you and Congressman Bass. And he was with us last Monday, and he talked about some of these issues, too. So if people want to listen to that interview, they can. So I won't tackle all of these, Ms. Custer, but you keep talking about the Clinton years when taxes were much higher than they are today. Are you suggesting that we should let these Bush tax cuts expire for everyone and go back to higher tax rates for everyone? Is that what
Absolutely
you're after there?
Absolutely not. No, we've got to keep taxes low for the middle class. That's where the middle class consumption is going to drive demand when people have a few extra dollars in their pocket. You know, I jokingly say that my husband and I date at the hardware store, because if there's a little bit of extra money and you feel that you can paint another room or maybe improve, make an improvement to your home, that's where what drives our economy. And that's what worked during the Clinton years, was to create 23 million new jobs. The economy was soaring at that time. And so what my point is, this trickle down that Congressman Bass and the Republicans talk about doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. We've tried it before. Giving tax breaks to the wealthiest among us is not an effective means to stimulate the economy. And here's why. They use this expression, the job creators.
Well, I did want to ask you about that, that if you raise taxes on this group, you're including a fair number of small business people whose incomes from their businesses are counted as personal income.
But here's the point, and it's a flawed premise of basic accounting. If you are creating new jobs, those expenses, the wages, the expenses to those jobs are deductible. You pay taxes on the net. So really what the Republicans are doing is protecting people who are not creating new jobs. They've got their money in the Cayman Islands, or they've pulled their money out of the economy. And that's been the problem that we've been facing, is that the money is not going into the creation of new jobs. I've been visiting businesses all across the state who are adding jobs. And that's what we need to be doing. Focus on manufacturing right here in New Hampshire and shipping the products to Shanghai. That's what New Hampshire companies are doing.
We will talk after a very short break. We'll start taking your calls, too. So join us at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
More with 2nd District Congressional candidate Ann McLean Custer on The Exchange on NHPR. And at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, it's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. Well, don't miss your favorite NHPR programs on Sunday. Remember to reset your clock. Daylight savings time ends this weekend, so before you go to sleep Saturday night, remember to turn your clocks back 1 hour. New Hampshire weather today, clouds, some sun, maybe a shower. Cloudiness will most be prevalent in northern New Hampshire, highs from 50 to 55 degrees statewide. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the Altus Investment Group in Concord. One office managing $40 million of retirement nest eggs for baby boomers in central New Hampshire. ALTUSinvest.com. And from Goff Wilson, a global immigration law firm, helping businesses and individuals achieve successful immigration solutions. Online at goffwilson.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, our guest is Ann McLean Custer, 2nd District Congressional candidate. She's a Democrat from Hopkinton, a longtime Concord area attorney. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. 2nd District voters, this is your race for your congressional seat. What do you want your next member of Congress to achieve for you? What final questions do you have for Ms. Custer before you go into the voting booth on Tuesday? The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or post a comment on the exchange page at nhpr.org. And Ms. Custer, before we go to our listeners and back to subjects like debt, deficits, fiscal cliff, job creation, I did want to ask you about a question that Republicans have raised about you, that you don't have the right temperament to be a member of Congress, citing the incident where you grabbed a camera from a Bass staffer who was tracking you and said something I don't want to say on the radio, but it was not a polite word. Also, a few weeks later, you took the mic from Congressman Bass during closing arguments at a forum in Nashua. What should voters make of these incidents, Ms. Custer, when they judge whether they want you to be their next member of Congress?
Well, first of all, Laura, the incidents didn't happen the way you've described. But rather than get into the details of that, I think it's pretty clear that Congressman Bass would like this race to be about anything but his record of 14 years in Congress, the votes that he's taken that are not in the interest of the voters here in New Hampshire. And so his handlers used a strategy to focus on a very old stereotype about women, that they are unstable, perhaps, and this is not anything that has ever come up in my entire lifetime, in my 25-year career.
Saying that you were too angry.
I'm not angry, and everyone knows that. And they've added in their ad campaign mocking me. And frankly, it's disrespectful to the voters, this entire line. And I've been surprised that the media has been so willing to accept this approach that his communications team has put together. It's disrespectful, not just to me, but to the voters, which is far more important. This is an important election. We have a great deal at stake. And this isn't personal between Charlie and me. I've known him my entire life. But I do feel that Congress is broken. And I'm delighted that voters are not paying attention to this media obsession with this line of attack that was created out of whole cloth by the handlers of Congressman Bass's campaign. And what the voters are much more concerned about is what affects them in their everyday lives. And frankly, women voters and a fair number of men, I need to add, have been very supportive of me. They're offended by the ads that have been run mocking women.
How do they
they're
mock
disrespectful.
Women? You mean the tap dancing ads?
Yeah, the click, click, click of the high heels as though women's ideas are frivolous. And I'm very proud of my record. I've been an important contributor to the not just the economy in terms of small business and working for New Hampshire businesses and working 25 years as a partner in a law firm here in Concord that's highly regarded and highly respected, but my role as an advocate for women. I think there are some people, and perhaps they're on Congressman Bass's campaign, that are threatened by that. I feel that women are an important part of our society. They're an important part of our economy here in New Hampshire. They deserve to be respected, and that, frankly, this type of just frivolous attack is disrespectful to all the voters.
Let's take some calls. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Ms. Custer, let's go first to Canterbury, and Hardy's on the air. Hi, Hardy. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Hardy.
How you doing?
Good. Are you on the ballot with me?
I am on the ballot with you.
Terrific.
Yes.
Good luck to you.
Sorry we're not going to be able to get to debate face-to-face tonight because I'm being excluded. But my question, to get to the question for you, is you talk about going back to Clinton's tax policies. How about, and that's not going to get us a balanced budget by any means. We need to cut $1.3 trillion. But we would also need to go back to Clinton's budget policy. And the budget under Clinton was $1.8 trillion. The budget today is over $3 trillion. So how are we going to get back to a balanced budget if we need to go all the way back to a reasonable budget of $1.8 trillion?
Okay. Hardy,
yeah,
thanks
I'm
for calling.
I'm with you on that,
and
Hardy.
I just want to jump in. Hardy, Marcia is the Libertarian 2nd Congressional District candidate. So
yes.
That's what you meant when you said, are you on the ballot with
yes,
me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I completely agree with you. We need a smaller government, a much more effective and efficient government. I think, you know, Congressman Bass, having been in Washington for 14 years and presided over the explosion of the federal government, particularly during the Bush years where we grew, certainly the two wars expanded the government dramatically, but also this prescription drug benefit that wasn't paid for, wasn't means tested. And furthermore, the example I cited where the federal government gave away the right to negotiate drug prices, that's the way that whole sector of the economy works, is on volume discounts. And so now Walmart gets a better price on medication than the federal government does. And
so
I agree with you that we do need to shrink the federal government.
Can I just jump in and ask a quick follow-up on that prescription drug benefit? Are you quibbling with the fact that this passed or just the way that it was done? Because a lot of seniors really like that prescription drug benefit.
Well, the prescription drug benefit is a good thing, but we shouldn't have made it a giveaway to the prescription drug companies. And this is what Congressman Bass and the Republicans voted for during those Bush years. And I'm saying it doesn't make any sense at all for Walmart to get a better price for medication than the federal government. We should get that volume discount. And one of the very first bills that I would sign on to, it's a bipartisan piece of legislation with Congressman Peter Welch from Vermont, that would allow the federal government to negotiate those prices. So that's just one example, but I agree with Hardy. There are many, many, many more.
Let's talk about a couple more then. How do you get a budget that's now at $3 trillion, as he says, down to the Clinton era, $1.8 trillion? Republicans say, for example, the Affordable Care Act is going to blow a huge hole in the federal budget, especially as you expand Medicaid far beyond what it does right now.
Here's the point about the Affordable Care Act that the Republicans don't want to talk about. They've created this false equivalency. The reality is that we cannot continue with the double-digit inflationary increases in our health care insurance. Small businesses cannot afford that, and we're seeing far too many personal bankruptcies related to health care expenses. What we need to do is cut the cost of health care.
And the Affordable Care Act, people say, doesn't do that.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet. It, over time, and this is what my focus has been, is to bring down the cost of care. We need to focus on prevention, value of care, not volume of care. Currently, we're paying our health care providers only for illness and injury, and we need to get ahead of the curve, treat up front the most expensive chronic illnesses, high blood pressure, heart disease, obesity, diabetes. Those all can be treated through relatively simple methods. It has to do with losing weight, getting exercise, eating right, taking your medicine in a timely way, getting a good night's sleep. The advantage of this approach through prevention is that we're going to feel better, and in the long run, it's going to cost less.
So the other piece, what are you saying about Obamacare then? And we can call it that now. The president says it's okay.
I call it Obamacare. He does care. President Obama does care.
Well, it used to be considered a derogatory term, but in a recent debate, the president said that was fine. So what are you saying, though, Ms. Custer? I mean, you're saying right now costs will remain high under the Affordable Care Act, but eventually they'll go down? That hasn't been the case in Massachusetts, for example.
They're here's what you have to think about is that I think we need to do more to bring down costs. But think about the interstate highway system. When it was first, the first mile of the interstate highway system, when people said it won't work in my community, you can't get over this mountain, you can't get around that lake. And then now, imagine our lives. We couldn't live without the interstate highway system. That's where we are on the healthcare reform. The fascinating part is that this research comes from right in the 2nd District here in New Hampshire. It's out of Dartmouth, the Dartmouth Institute. And what they've the research that they've done and where they have pilot projects around the country where they're using this approach, you give the incentive to healthcare providers to keep us well so that instead of just focusing on when we're ill and injured, they're focusing on keeping us well and they can get out ahead of the curve treating these illnesses. Let me give you a very simple, concrete example for rehospitalization in Medicare. When someone ends up back in the hospital from infection or complication, it's extremely expensive. We can eliminate all of that and, in some studies, cut 40% of the cost.
And we've talked to the folks at the Dartmouth Atlas Project. We've looked at accountable care organizations that get at some of those issues. I've got a couple other questions about Obamacare, but I also want to share you with our listeners, Ms. Custer. So let's go back to them now. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And in Lebanon, we're just talking about Dartmouth. In Lebanon, Karen is calling in. Hi, Karen. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I have a question for Annie about, in light of Hurricane Sandy, in light of Irene last year, about her thoughts on the role of the federal government with disaster response. And particularly as a city councilor, I'm curious about her. I'd like to hear her talk about the role of the federal government with coordination of local and state government as well.
Thank you, Karen. Excellent question. I think, first of all, let me just say that my heart goes out to everyone here in New Hampshire that's been impacted the storm, and certainly folks down in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. It's just devastating. We've been in touch with family and friends down there, and I think it's going to be a very difficult recovery for many of them. But let me say that what Hurricane Sandy has proven to us without a doubt is that hurricanes do not respect state boundaries. In fact, it's somewhat ludicrous, the commentary coming from, frankly, Governor Romney and others saying that this should be a state response. First of all, the states don't have the resources to respond on their own. But second of all, it's very clear, and New York and New Jersey and Connecticut are the best example yet, of why it needs to be an organized, coordinated response. They're completely dependent upon one another. Those tunnels, the people's lives are so interdependent there. And so I do believe it needs to be a federal response. I was very pleased with the bipartisan response, frankly, with Governor Christie and President Obama. I watched with interest their remarks and their press conferences about that coordination. And I really think it's one of the most concrete examples for people about the difference between the approach that President Obama and the Democrats will take versus the approach of Governor Romney, which, frankly, isn't plausible in this type of scenario.
Karen, thanks for the call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. I want to return to something that you talked about earlier. This relates to FEMA and government spending. You've said several times, Ms. Custer, that you're for a smaller, leaner government. And yet, you know, we've got Obamacare. President Obama did the stimulus package. There's been some spending on alternative energy, other spending that Republicans would call wasteful. What else would you specifically cut? I mean, it's real easy to say small, lean government, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. and it's real easy to say defense projects that nobody wants. But boy, in those congressional districts, those aren't wasteful. Those are important projects. So I'd like more specifics from you about what you would cut. In a large way, it's easy to say efficiency mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. forth, but can you
sure.
be more specific?
Absolutely.
Look, where do you get big bangs for your buck?
Look at the agricultural subsidies that favor large, large, multi-billion-dollar companies. All of the energy subsidies that go to not just oil and gas, but nuclear and coal, I don't think we can afford that level of support for corporations that, frankly, are doing very well on their own. And I think the important thing here is follow the money, that the United States Congress and the decisions that are being made there are being made based upon money that's flowing from big, big corporations. My opponent, $4 out of $5 in his campaign is from corporate PACs. I not only want to go to Congress, I want to change the way people go to Congress, and so that I will have the autonomy to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the state of New Hampshire. And so $4 out of $5 in my campaign are from individuals. The average contribution out of 25,000 contributions is only $53. So I will have the luxury of representing the interest here in the state. And that's what I'm talking about, a leaner government, a more effective and efficient government, is that so many of the decisions that get made in Washington are made on the basis of these campaign contributions to people who have been in Congress forever, 14 years for my opponent, but there's a congressman that's been in for 40 years, and you're just not seeing the type of change in this institution that all the other institutions in our society have been through over the past 25 or 30 years.
Although you've gotten some outside money, too. Republicans say that you've gotten, gosh, they call you Super PAC Custer, a big chunk from Friends of Democracy, for example, tied to liberal billionaire George Soros. So, you know, you haven't been immune to the big money and the outside
spending.
Those
are individual corporate contributions. I don't have any big PAC contributions like that to my campaign. The PACs that do contribute to my campaign are organizations that I'm already been involved with, women's organizations. Emily's List has been very helpful, for example, some environmental organizations, peace organizations. But otherwise, it's individual contributions.
Let's take another call. This is Anna in Concord. Hi, Anna. You're on The Exchange with Anne McLean Custer. Go ahead.
Hi. I think you kind of already addressed a little bit of what my question was, but it was just with all the special interest money that is playing a role in this election, if you are taking money from these groups, how do you balance that while still representing the constituents?
And if you can, thanks to Anna for the call.
Thank you, Anna.
And it's hard to weed it out or to separate it, because there are groups that donate to your campaign, but then there are groups who spend money in the district on your behalf, even though they're not associated with your campaign.
Right. That is the whole Citizens United influence, and they're... This is one of the top races in the country, and there are millions of dollars that are being spent that I have nothing to do with. And I'm honored to have the support of organizations. As I said, the women's organizations, Emily's List, I believe, is making some independent expenditures in this district. But I think the voters can see through all of this, frankly, as I've been saying for a number of weeks. Turn the television off if you're offended by it all. I should say that I'm a much better dancer than that. So
dancing commercials.
Well, the funniest thing about that ad, frankly, is that my name recognition, you know, just coming up the elevator here when I arrived this morning, and a woman saying, oh, you're so much nicer in person than I thought. And I said, well, that's an actress that he's hired to... to do that. So I think people can see through it. I think they'll make their own independent decisions on Tuesday. And I think they understand the enormity of the decision that we face here in New Hampshire. You know, we're right at the cross section now. The presidency could be decided here, certainly the governor's race, two congressional races, and then our whole state house. And we haven't talked about that, but that's extremely important. So it's a big election.
Anna, thanks a lot for the call. We'll try to get to as many of your calls and emails after a short break. And Ms. Custer, I have another question also about the election money, but mostly we will go to your calls and emails and postings on the Exchange page and on Facebook after a short break, so keep it right here.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at anselm.edu/NHIOP. And Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
There are many ways for your business to support NHPR. Of course, you can get your message to NHPR listeners by underwriting the programs on air, but there are also opportunities to get your message to Granite Staters who use our many new media platforms, including our website, our live stream, and our new iPhone app. Find out how to speak to some of the most independent minds in the state. Visit the business support page at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, your last-minute questions before the Tuesday election. You can email us those questions before the show if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, and then join us Monday morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, 2nd District Congressional Democratic candidate Anne McLean Custer is with us, and you can join us too at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's go right back to our callers, Ms. Custer. Chester's waiting in Concord. Hi, Chester. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks very much. Ms. Custer, you claim to be bipartisan, yet you're receiving support from groups like MoveOn.org, and they're even coming to New Hampshire to campaign for you this weekend. Given this, how can you claim to be a bipartisan advocate for New Hampshire?
Thanks for the call, Chester. And yeah, and I want to just add to that, too. I've got some information from opensecrets.org, again, that talks about the $200,000 that you got from Super PAC Friends of Democracy, again, funded by George Soros. So go ahead. Let's finish up this money segment, and then we can talk a little bit more about energy policy.
Yeah, absolutely. My background is definitely bipartisan, and I have spent my entire life that way. I like to say I was born bipartisan. I was raised in a Republican family. My mother, Susan McLean, served 25 years in the New Hampshire legislature as a Republican. My father was a Republican executive counselor and ran for governor as an independent. So my law partners are a Republican. Actually, Tom Rath is one of Governor Romney's top advisors. And it's the way I've always approached the work that I do of bringing people together to get things done here in New Hampshire. So my position is I don't care if an idea is Republican or Democrat. It's whether it is beneficial to the people of the state of New Hampshire, in which case I'll roll up my sleeves and get the job done. You know, I know Senator Ayotte well. Kelly and I worked in the same law firm. We share a hairdresser, and I'm very confident that we can find ways to work together. We don't agree on everything, certainly, but and the same can be said for bills that I could work on with, for example, Rob Portman from Ohio, who is doing work on renewable energy and energy efficiency and shrinking the size of government. So there are a number of facets to this, but I don't owe anything to anybody that may be coming to New Hampshire. I'm happy to have individuals going door to door and making phone calls.
Can you name a specific instance or example, Ms. Custer, of where you actually see things more from the Republican perspective? Because, again, the charge from Congressman Bass's camp is that you're too liberal for New Hampshire, too liberal for the district. So give us an example of a bill.
Sure.
Or an effort that is more Republican-leaning.
Again, that's a political tactic that they've used. I know he loves to use that description, but it's not representative of the life that I lead or the work that I've done. So just to give concrete examples of the work that I've done here in New Hampshire, both the Unique College Savings Plan and the Medication Bridge Program that I worked on were bipartisan. We worked with State Senator Ned Gordon, a Republican, and State Senator Sylvia Larson from Concord, a Democrat, on the Unique College Savings Plan. And in terms of ideas going forward,
yeah, in
absolutely,
Congress, on
sure.
Capitol
Hill. So I've mentioned already the prescription drug negotiation bill that's a bipartisan bill, and that's Representative Peter Welch from Vermont, but he has bipartisan Republican co-sponsors on that bill. Another idea, Senator Ayotte has a wonderful idea for New Hampshire that I would sign on to immediately. We don't have a sales tax, so there's efforts to collect an internet state sales tax, and it would be very burdensome for New Hampshire businesses to collect state sales taxes for other states. I don't think that that should happen, and I would work with Kelly on that. I support Governor Romney's proposal to eliminate the capital gains tax for individuals and small businesses up to $250,000. I think we should lower the corporate tax rates, and that's a Republican notion, but I think that we have among the highest in the world, and I think we need to close loopholes, do that in a revenue-neutral way, but I would have no problem in bringing those rates down. So there are a number of issues and frankly, a lot of Republicans agree with me that we need to bring the troops home from Afghanistan and be nation-building right here at home.
Loopholes. We talked about that a lot yesterday on the Exchange, and that's something that the Romney campaign has talked about. But when you get into details, you know, which loopholes, what deductions are we talking about? Nobody wants the charitable deduction gotten rid of. A lot of people would fight nobody. It's an idea that's very controversial. Mm-hmm. Also, getting rid of the home mortgage deduction is very controversial. So loopholes sounds great, but where do you start with that?
Well, the one that is particularly troublesome for me, and this is where Congressman Bass and I have a very, very different opinion. He was quoted in our last campaign of saying that every job that's outsourced, two new jobs are created. Frankly, I disagree with that assessment. I think that we should try to keep jobs here in America. I think Made in America is a way to grow our economy. And so I would close down the tax benefits for companies that ship jobs overseas. They take deductions for the expenses and shipping the jobs and building new factories, that type of thing. Rather, I would benefit companies that create jobs right here at home. I was very excited recently. I was at a company, W.H. Bagshaw, down in Nashua, and they were creating manufacturing pins, and they had a wonderful example of a pin that used to be made in China for a company in Bedford, New Hampshire. Now they're making it in Nashua, and they're just a few exits up the highway. And so it's a win-win-win for everyone, and it was really delightful to see packages at the end of the row in that manufacturing plant that were being shipped to Shanghai rather than the other way around. That's what we should be encouraging.
There are high-tech manufacturers here in New Hampshire, you know, companies that are often listed as some of our best, who have headquarters here. They make the ideas here. The management is here, but they have factories overseas, China, India, just because the costs here are so much higher, from energy to healthcare and on and on and on. So, you know, in one sense, there's an argument that, hey, that's economics. So why should we shut that down?
Well, I just think that we can improve the economics here. Why increase their expenses when it's a marginal decision? Let me give you a great example. Mascoma, a wonderful new company up in the Upper Valley. It's a renewable energy company brought about by some incredible advances in technology. And at the end of that tour, they laid out for me all of the advantages for oil and gas companies in our tax structure, but very few for renewable energy companies. I'm saying let's create a level playing field for renewable energy, eliminate all those oil and gas subsidies and the tax advantages and loopholes. We can save money, pay down our deficit, and create a level playing field so that people will invest in a company like Mascoma and they can start building things right here in New Hampshire.
So no subsidies for them either, though, if we're going to have a level playing field? Is that what you're saying?
Right. That rather than what Congressman Bass, I think he's never seen an energy subsidy that he wouldn't vote for, that's going to cost us a lot of money to increase all those other subsidies. I'm saying let's get a level playing field, save tax dollars, reduce the deficit, and invest so that companies can invest in renewable energy.
Here's an email from John right along those lines. John in Amherst, he says, I was disappointed just now to hear Annie lump subsidies for nuclear power in with subsidies for coal. Nuclear power, especially new technology, small-scale nuclear power plants, support a town or a village, produce no greenhouse gases. Very different, John says, from coal or other fossil fuels. It's an interesting question. Thanks, John. What about nuclear power? Which category would you lump it with?
Well, the way it has developed so far in America, it's not small scale.
It's large
it's
scale.
It's definitely very large scale and extremely expensive federal subsidies that I don't believe in this era of deficit control and balanced budgets we can afford. I want to get to a balanced budget, and my proposal is let's stop any new increases in congressional pay until we get to a balanced budget. Senator Shaheen, who endorsed me yesterday, we had a wonderful event down in Salem, has a bill in the Senate that would require a balanced budget, which is the way we do it here in New Hampshire. And I think
by law.
Absolutely. And I think that I need to take these frugal Yankee values that I was raised on again, you know, back to the bipartisanship and my upbringing as a Republican. These values are still very much with me. Less government interference in people's lives, people's personal lives. Frugal values where we get the best value for the buck and where we know how to stretch a buck here in New Hampshire. And so I want to get back to balanced budgets, eliminate the deficits, and bring down the debt. Part of the problem and one of the reasons I'm running is that I think our generation has not done a good job for future generations.
Well, speaking of less government interference, and I hate to keep getting back to the Affordable Care Act, but boy, businesses, Ms. Custer, I'm sure you've heard from them too, are very worried about this law, saying it presents impossible choices, you know, whether to expand, whether to not expand, so to stay below the 50-employee threshold, whether to pay the fine or incur the cost of employee coverage. Even supporters of the law have said that it might encourage employers to switch full-time workers to part-time so they won't have to pay for health coverage. So, boy, a lot of businesses see this as an enormous source of government interference.
I haven't heard any of that, Laura. That actually sounds like the Republican talking points to me, because what I hear from businesses is that they simply can't afford to cover their employees. Look, small business is the driving force in our economy in New Hampshire. That's where the jobs come from. And every small business I visited, the most valuable asset they have is their people. And they want their people to be healthy, to be well. They want them to be on the job and working rather than worrying about their family's health and well-being. I'm of the sandwich generation. I was raising my kids while I was taking care of my mother with Alzheimer's disease.
I remember you wrote a book about
I've
that.
Seen that with all of my colleagues, men and women, losing time from work, worried about their parents, worried about their kids. So I think that, again, it's a false equivalency, because the premise that you stated implies that the current system was working. It was not working. And what we need to do is bring down the cost of health care, increase access. We all pay when someone shows up at the hospital without insurance. And that's the direction that the Republicans will end up going. And frankly, it's the death spiral of the health care delivery system, because nobody will be able to afford insurance.
Here's an email from Denise, who says she lives in the 2nd District. She says, listening to Ms. Custer this morning, I hear her start all of her answers with an attack on Mr. Bass or the Republicans. Wow, Denise says, this is off-putting. If Romney is elected, how will she work with him to benefit the people of New Hampshire? Denise, thanks for the email.
Sure. And if Romney is elected, I'm more than happy to work with him. As I mentioned, I know a number of people who are in that camp, and I've always worked well with them, including my colleague, Tom Rath. So I certainly apologize, Denise. I don't mean to be off-putting. I think a number of people are trying to make an important decision with 4 days to go. And out of respect for the voters, I think to give them the contrast in the positions that Congressman Bass has taken. He has a long record, 14 years in Congress, and I think it's important to point out the differences. But it's, again, not personal, and I'm more than happy to work with whoever. I've always worked with Republicans. I know Ovid Lamontagne very well, and although I'll be casting my ballot for Maggie Hassan, and I hope she wins, I know that I can work with all of the Republicans.
Let's take one more call, if we could. Miranda's been waiting in Hollis. Hi, Miranda. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to do with Medicare. There's a lot of, you know, ads that fly back and forth on both sides, and a lot of stuff that's been said and proven false by both sides. And I'm someone who's just entering the workforce, but I do worry about taking care of my parents later in life. And I'm just kind of interested in what is the future of Medicare for my generation.
Wow. And a whole hour of conversation about that. But Miranda, it's a great point and very relevant to this election. Go ahead, Ms. Custer, if
yep,
you could.
I will, and I'll keep it short, Miranda, but thank you. It's the most important question of this election, and I'm glad we didn't leave it out. So Congressman Bass has voted for the Ryan budget, which would create a voucher system, and I oppose the voucher system because the voucher will not keep up with the rising cost of Medicare and the rising cost of health care. What I want to do is keep the guaranteed benefit of Medicare and focus our efforts on bringing down the cost. And the best example I can give you is that rehospitalization. It's very, very expensive when people end up back in the hospital from infection or complications. What we need to do is send home care into the home to help people with their recovery so that they don't end up back in the hospital, and you'll have significant cost savings. And in addition, the cost savings that I talked about with the chronic illnesses, particularly in the Medicare population. I'll just end by saying that when I spent 5 years with my father caring for my mother, it was very clear to me that patients with dementia, patients with Alzheimer's, patients with senior issues, if you will, could not begin to navigate a voucher system where they would go out and negotiate private pay. So I think it's just a false premise from the very start, and I will work very hard to keep the guaranteed benefits of Medicare.
Thanks a lot for the call, Miranda. And absolutely, we'll be doing more follow-up shows on that topic because it's important. I want to ask you just a couple last quick questions, if I could, Ms. Custer. Looking at the dysfunction in Congress that you mentioned, the low esteem with which Americans hold Congress, no matter what their political party, why do you even want to go down there?
Well, it's funny, Laura, I've said that
if you're in
the 9% of Americans who think that Congress is functioning very, very well, then two more years to add to the 14 years of Congressman Bass may be your choice. But I feel very strongly that this is an institution that needs to change. I've been a change agent in other times in my life, certainly going off to a college that had been all male for 200 years and
Dartmouth.
Coming to the New Hampshire bar when there were very few women lawyers there. And it's not just about gender, but it's about diversity of ideas and experience. I haven't been in politics my whole life. In fact, this is the first office that I've run for. I've been in the business community. I've been a mom. I've been juggling my family, taking care of my mother, taking care of my own kids, and being a part of my community, serving on boards. And I think that I have a voice for the middle class that needs to be heard in Washington, a voice for students and seniors and veterans, a moderate voice of reason that I can work across the aisle, I can bring people together, and I can help to get things done in a way that serves the needs of the voters of the 2nd Congressional District.
All right, Ms. Custer, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Laura. I enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
Ann McLean Custer, 2nd District Congressional Candidate, a Democrat from Hopkinton, and an attorney based in Concord. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. A volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a panel of political experts to answer any final questions you may have before you vote on Election Day. Then on the big day, we talk with constitutional scholars about what our nation's most important document says about voting. And the day after, we crunch the numbers as to who won, who didn't, and where the state and the nation go from here. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Domestic Hour of the